Panthers podcast. Back here with you, Max Henson, Brian Strickland, Panthers.com. And 2 weeks, two victories, 2-0 Panthers team. It's pretty straightforward and simple, huh, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, not exactly. Obviously, Max, in this league, it never is quite that easy. We'll break that down today. There's a lot to discuss, I know, the good, the bad, the ugly. I will say, I've always wondered that phrase, where that comes from. There's like two negatives in that, right? Why isn't it just the good and the bad?
I thought about that myself. Yeah. That's true. There are two negatives there. So we're just going to do the good and the bad.
Okay, I like it.
Well, let's start with the good, and I think you have to start with, obviously, Cam Newton's warm-up cleats.
I mean, obviously.
The Sriracha-inspired too much sauce cleats. I think they're my favorite cleats I've seen Cam wear.
Yeah.
For those of you who didn't see, and I'm sure most of you have by now, but bright red on the heel, it said too much sauce, inspired, of course, by the Sriracha hot sauce that has become hugely popular. They were awesome.
Yeah, I'm holding up a picture now if the viewers can see that. Oh, wait, sorry, that was a different show. Yeah, actually, my son has some shoes like that. I thought for a second Cam had taken his shoes. They're pretty bright. Sriracha, it's fitting though, right, Max? I mean, it's become like the in sauce, right?
It is. Yeah. It's kind of a little weird to me how popular it's become. Like, fast food chains are using it on burgers and sandwiches. Chips companies are coming out with Sriracha-flavored stuff. It's just you see it everywhere. But I will say I'm a huge fan of Sriracha. I mean,
I have become a fan, yes. I will suggest something people should try. I know you're going to think it's weird if you have not. Sriracha and peanut butter together as a topping on various meat products works pretty darn well.
Yeah, I questioned it at first. So you kind of steered me in that direction. And I will say, I can confirm that that is solid. probably better than solid. That's underselling it a little bit. It's pretty dang good. But... moving away from hot sauce and how tasty it is, let's move into what everybody's really here to listen to, and that's some Panthers football talk. We talked about we were going to get through the good and the bad. Beyond the cleats, the good that we saw, Brian, I think you have to start, obviously, with the defensive side of the ball, another dominant performance.
Yeah, the defense is hot, right? They should have been wearing Sriracha shoes, I guess, the way they were playing and the way their feet were moving, listening to Steve Wilks yesterday talk about the way the run defense particularly is played and looking at some of the numbers. I mean, amazing effort when you see what LeSean McCoy did the previous week against the Jets. And you might say, okay, well, it's the Jets. But then you look at what Carlos Hyde did last week against the Seahawks versus what he was not able to do against the Panthers. And, you know, Steve Wilks is a secondary guy. He's been in, you know, that in the defensive backfield for a long time. But he understands that it starts with stopping the run, and they're doing a great job with that.
Yeah, I mean, look, what more can you say? The defense has just been shutting teams down. I mean, look, 49ers and Bills, people are going to look at those two opponents and say, we haven't seen anything yet. Wait until you see some high-powered offenses. And we're going to find out in the next 2 weeks, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean,
Drew Brees, Tom Brady, those two offenses for sure have the pedigree that I think people will, you know, give this defense some due respect if they perform along the lines that they have been those first 2 weeks. But just some of the numbers. Obviously, number one in total defense is where you start. That's
right.
That's the place you want to be.
That's good.
7 of 28 third downs is all the Carolina has given up so far. They've given up just 1 of 6 fourth down opportunities. I mean, they're just getting off the field. That's the money down, as defensive coordinators across the league will tell you. You know, can you get off the field on third down? Can you get your offense back out there? That's what this Carolina defense has done. It's been extremely impressive. And one of the guys who was particularly impressive Sunday, Julius Peppers. I mean, he's just fun to talk about. He's fun to watch. And Sunday, the home opener against Buffalo was a special moment for him. And he delivered when he took the field, 2 sacks. The guy just keeps on chugging along like he hasn't, you know, aged a bit.
And the Peppers name, can we keep that theme going maybe with the hot throughout?
My goodness, this is just,
right? It's perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I would say this defensive line required a boost, so to speak, but Julius Peppers has done things to take it to another level. You stated those numbers. The guy having 2 sacks, the consistency he's had throughout his career. I mean, you keep thinking, I mean, he's been in the league 16 years now.
Yeah, year 16. Yeah.
You think, you know, guys tend to hit a wall like a little bit before that, and you're like, okay, well, maybe this is the year. Like, there's hope he has something left in the tank, but maybe not. And then you see what he's done, especially this past week, and it's like, wow, this guy is phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been pretty amazing how seamlessly he's fit in back here and how comfortable he looks, because he did not come back to a team where, I mean, there are a couple faces that were familiar to him, but a lot had changed since he had left the first time.
Yeah.
So he came back, and the way, of course, everybody has welcomed him back, but, you know, Peppers is a guy that kind of has that personality where he doesn't like to say a whole lot, kind of can keep to himself at times, but it really seen him open up in a lot of ways in these past few weeks, and I thought it was really cool, and, you know, put this out there, and I think fans, you know, really thought it was cool to hear this. You know, Luke is always the last guy to run out of the tunnel in pregame intros, and in the home opener Sunday, it was Julius Peppers who was the last guy to run out, and that made for a really cool moment for the fans and for Pep, as kind of he's back, and everybody got to enjoy that. But I wondered kind of how that came to be, and of course, I found out after the game and talking to Peppers, it was Luke's idea.
Right.
And he said, he told me, man, it's Julius Peppers. I mean, of course I would do that. He deserved that for all he's done for the franchise. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's not that big a deal to other people. For me, I just thought, and it's pregame intros. It doesn't have an influence on the outcome. It's kind of just a show. A lot of people just want to get that over with. Okay, let's get to the game.
Yeah.
But for me, that kind of spoke volumes as to Luke, to Pep, and really what he means to this whole place.
And I guess not that surprising it turned out to be Luke.
Of course not.
They did that. I mean, obviously, he's in a position to influence that as well. But, yeah, I mean, I was not officially around the first time Peppers was here, but I, you know, of course, followed the team. And I don't know quite how to say this. I don't know if there's a pressure lifted off of him this time around. I mean, I know things didn't end perfect here the first time. And, you know, you're talking about his second pick in the draft. He was awesome. But then, you know, people nitpick with players that have such high expectations. And there'd be like a part of the fan base that would say, oh, this guy takes plays off.
Yeah.
You know, where's the effort? And then it just kind of all built up. And then he went somewhere else. And I don't know. It almost seemed like a weight was lifted in that. In interviews,
no doubt,
he became more, you know, open. I know, again, he doesn't say that much, but he just kind of opened up the personality a little more. And then he comes back, and, you know, things have changed, and he's at a different stage in his career, and he's just enjoying it, I think.
Yeah, he's been holding court with the media recently, just literally standing there laughing, taking every last question. It's been cool to see just how comfortable he looks here, and obviously the way he's playing is great to see for everybody who's got a rooting interest in the Panthers. Moving on from Peppers onto some of the other things that were good that we saw. Look, the passing game had some good and some bad for sure, but I did think, by and large, Brian, that we saw Cam take a step forward against Buffalo, targeting the deep middle of the field. Looked like he kind of settled in and got into a bit of a rhythm, and the numbers were pretty good. I mean, you look at Cam's numbers, and he finishes 20 of 32, 228 yards, a rating of 83.9.
Yep.
I did not expect big numbers from the passing game early in the season with all that we've talked about, but against Buffalo, and look, I know they didn't punch into the end zone, but there were times where I thought this passing game showed that it had taken some strides.
Yeah, it was. I mean, no interceptions, of course. You know, when we get into the bad, we'll mention something that impacted him when he did seem to struggle during the game. But, yeah, I mean, I thought a better job of taking what the defense gave him, taking the layups, as we talk about. You know, anytime I'm not – quick with math, but I guess that's more than 60% completion percentage probably.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hitting guys in the middle of the field. They really abused the Bills for a while in the middle of the field and took advantage of that.
Yeah.
And, no interceptions, by the way. I mean, you know, a game like this, just if we'd had one takeaway, one turnover, that would have made a huge difference.
I was saying it too in the press box. That was the kind of game where it felt like if there was going to be one mistake, that could be the one that turned the game and became the decisive play.
And we'll talk about another negative that, you know, on the injury front, but, you know, Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess, even before that injury, you know, were very active, the most active we've seen Funchess in quite a while.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Kelvin and Devin's performances. You know, Kelvin was a physical presence throughout, and on a really well thrown ball from Cam to him in the end zone on that first drive. And you have to credit Poyer and the Bills for just making the play to ensure that was not caught for a touchdown. Other than that, Kelvin finishes with 6 catches for 77 yards. Yeah, I thought he was tremendous throughout the day. Funchess, 4 for 68. The most yards Devin Funchess has had in a game since his rookie year in 2015. And I think they're going to need him. I think they're going to need him going forward, because if we get into the bad, Greg Olsen's out.
Yeah.
And that is a tough, tough blow for this team. We know how much he does, how much he brings to the table. We don't even need to really get into all that, because it's understood. But that is a really difficult pill to swallow for everybody. It feels good to be 2-0, I'm sure, for Panther fans, but seeing that 88 broke his foot makes that not feel quite as good.
Yeah, and the way it happened, I mean, it puts a exclamation point on, wow, he didn't miss a game for 10 years. I mean, for it happened like that, not, you know, non-contact, boom, he's, you know, he's got a broken foot. It's crazy. It's pretty surreal to see that happen. You know, not to throw out the cliches, but hey, guess what? Football is a team game. I don't know if you've heard that before. And, you know, this team has had to roll without Luke Kuechly at times. It's had to roll without Cam on occasion. And, you know, for the most part, they are able to fill that hole and compete. You got 11 guys out there at one time. Mike Shula said Ed Dixon's playing the best he's played as a Panther. And again, like, I know Greg was going to pick it up. There's no doubt about it. But this team was winning when he was healthy, when he was not necessarily as involved as he has been at times throughout his career.
Yeah, I mean, as you were alluding to, it's just such a foregone conclusion that you're going to have Greg Olsen out there every week. You know, he just hasn't missed. Well, his start streak was at
159.
80, right?
Start streak. Yeah.
But as consecutive game, I mean, hadn't missed a game since his rookie year back in 2007. I mean, you know, the guy is just an iron man. And so, like you said, to see him go down on that kind of play, and it's just a shock to the system, because you just always know that he's going to be there. So tough for Greg, tough for the Panthers offense. But as we said, they've got to move forward. They've got to find a way to have success without him. We mentioned Funchess, and I wrote about this yesterday. But I do think that one thing I want to say first and foremost, because I know this gets thrown out there every time we talk about Kelvin and Devin and their size and what they can bring to the offense. They are not tight ends.
Right.
They are not going to be tight ends. But with Olsen out, I do think there's a huge opportunity for those two guys to emerge for this offense. We know Kelvin, as the number one wide receiver, is always going to have a big role. But Devin, look, we've talked about it all last year. Didn't really have that many opportunities to showcase his ability. Ron Rivera talked about the fact that they needed to find ways to get him more involved. Well, this wasn't the ideal way to get him more involved, but now here are the cards that have been dealt. And I think Devin can do some things that Olsen could provide this offense at times. Olsen played like a wide receiver at times, wouldn't they, you know, move him into the slot, the routes he can run from that area. I'm not saying Devin is going to be a tight end, but I think he can do some of the things that Olsen did and help give this offense a big target in times of need. And that's the situation they've got right now.
Yeah,
they need him.
Yeah, I mean, that's agreed upon by me. That was a very awkward sentence. Sorry about that. As with any
– we should have an awkward sentence tally for you during the podcast.
Should I stop every time and point out that it was awkward, or should I just keep going?
I guess we'll see.
Okay.
Depending on how
have like
awkward.
A bell we can ring.
Yeah. Maybe we're on Jared. Intern Jared.
Okay, so now it's going to be an awkward transition, but I was going to move on to – you know, whoever's catching passes, whatever that is, another one in our bad category we have here. You know, it's the offensive line, relatively speaking, to week one.
Yeah, what happened to our – I mean, we were talking, just heaping the praise on the offensive line after week one, protecting Cam. We talked about how critical that was. I mean, what happened, Brian? I mean, 6 sacks against the Bills, obviously a major step backward from what we saw in the opener.
I mean, so good in the preseason, so good in the opener. The Bills, obviously, the toughest D line they had faced. I don't know. I mean, I tried to ask, you know, Matt Khalil after the fact yesterday, like, do we? I mean, at a certain point, you credit the Bills. That's part of it. And that's kind of what I was trying to get at him. And you credit Sean McDermott. You know, was it? Did he kind of have our number because of that information, and that helped as far as putting pressure on the on Cam? Or did the line? The other thing is, did they just have a collective bad day? I mean, we know that happens. How much did Ryan Khalil not being in there impact things, even though Tyler Larson did a good job? But we know Ryan's the captain, the coach on the field for that offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I think this a lesson learned here maybe, and again, is this early in the season, you can't take too much away from what you see. First game, there's no major takeaways.
Right.
You know, maybe myself included got a little too excited about the offensive line after that first game. And look, they're still working through some things. Ryan Khalil being, you know, telling everybody, you know, he couldn't go right before the kickoff pretty much, and Tyler Larson having to step in. I think Tyler did a pretty decent job in that tough a situation, but that's not an ideal scenario for an offensive line to have happen right before. We talked about Sean McDermott and his, you know, his knowledge of this team, and sure, I think that played a role, but yeah, not the standard that they want to hold themselves to by any means. They have to protect Cam better. We saw Cam writhing in pain after one of those sacks, and of course that's a scary moment for everybody in the building when that happens. And that's that it all speaks to the importance of protecting your franchise quarterback. And so, yes, going forward, eyes again will be all on this offensive line to see how well they can keep him protected, because after a tremendous showing in week one, week two was reminiscent of last year, really, and the problems that created for this entire offense.
That's right, Mike. So we're going to move on to another disturbing trend. Okay, that's a little strong term.
What's that?
I mean, are we going through – I'm looking at this next thing on the bad list. We want to talk about the secondary a little bit. That was another awkward sentence. Ding! Okay, that's number two. So, the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about how great this defense was. It was almost all for naught.
Right. Yeah, that last scary play, I'd made it my way down to the sidelines and had quite the view of seeing Zay Jones pretty much wide open. An ECU kid coming home. You know, we think about –
you could see the story writing
itself
already,
right? E.J. Manuel back in 2013, you know, the celebratory moment in Buffalo when they won in the last second. I, like, had a flashback back in my mind of that. And the pass wasn't quite on target. Zay couldn't quite bring it in. And, you know, as Steve Wilks said yesterday, teams are going to continue to, you know, challenge this secondary. And understandably so. You got to pick some spot to try to target, you know, that you feel like you can take advantage of. And it's not that the secondary is shaky per se, but with what the front seven's doing, you know, kind of the opposite of pick your poison, so to speak. And the good news for me is, you know, James Bradberry took blame for that, so to speak. He recognized after the fact they had, you know, the Bills kind of had the perfect play call for it too.
They did for
the defense the Panthers ran, but live and learn, and it's a lot better to learn lessons like that after a win than it is a loss.
Yeah, I mean, look, offensively for Carolina, this is the risk you run when you don't find a way to punch it into the end zone and you have to kick field goals. And so as well as Carolina's defense had played, because at that point it was only three field goals on the board for Carolina, they're clinging to a 9-3 lead. And after all that, it's down to one drive. Buffalo can win the game with a touchdown. And we saw Tyrod Taylor and the Bills start to get something going there, and there were some anxious moments for sure, and especially on the fourth down play. They had the right play called. They were able to fool James Bradberry. Steve Wilks talked openly about the fact that he needs to play with better vision on that. He did not take on his assignment properly.
Right.
Zay Jones was not, of course, supposed to be that wide open, but the throw wasn't quite where Tyrod, I think, wanted it to be. But Zay Jones, I'm sure, still feels like he should have made that catch with two hands on the ball, but he dropped it. And Carolina prevails. They win despite almost all of that tremendous work on defense resulting in a loss.
Yeah.
And so, yes, hopefully a lesson very much learned for both sides of the ball, because you look at it offensively, if Cam hits Christian McCaffrey on third and goal, he walks into the end zone for a touchdown, nothing to worry about. And then defensively, of course, it shows you. And these guys don't need to be taught this. They understand, but it's something about going through it, again, that reinforces it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how well you play. When a game that close in the NFL, these games tend to be very close at the end. It can all be gone the snap of a finger like that. And so fortunately for Carolina, it didn't bite him that time, and they're 2-0. Well, let's move into our guest call-in presented by Bose. This week we've got Alex Marvez calling from his home base down in Florida. Alex, how you doing, man?
Good. Just cranking. You know, we lost power for a couple of days last week. It's back, and getting back to life normally, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. So, hey, wanted to talk to you about this 2-0 Panthers team and really just kind of get your just assessment of where they are right now. Obviously, look, they're 2-0, but there's certainly a lot to talk about with this group.
Listen, you can't ask for anything more from this Carolina Panthers defense. They have been outstanding, arguably the best in the league through the first two games. You know, and listen, I understand they're playing teams that have new head coaches, installing new systems, in San Francisco and in Buffalo, but to not yield a touchdown to those teams, I think speaks volumes about the level that this unit is at. Listen, the Carolina Panthers, if this defense keeps playing like this, even if the offense sputters, are likely a double-digit win team. I think the big thing on offense is, and listen, Sean McDermott knows where the bones are buried, so to speak. We understand that as a defensive coordinator for the Panthers for a long time, he's aware of some of this team's tendencies, their strengths, their weaknesses, much like the Panthers knew how Sean McDermott thought. But in this case, his defensive attack really stressed that Carolina Panthers offensive line, and you know, you just start worrying about it. It's been a problem area for this team for a long period of time, and you were hoping, you know, everyone was hoping that it would get addressed during the offseason,
right.
And instead, you give up six sacks, and that's something that is reason for concern moving forward.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Alex, specifically the line. I mean, week one, no sacks allowed. Week two, two sacks allowed. What is your overall view of where that group is headed?
You know, one thing you got to hope is that as time goes on, as Matt Khalil continues to get comfortable with his new teammates, that, you know, they will continue to grow. But these guys, I mean, they're familiar with each other. This isn't all that, you know, all that unfamiliar a group, to be quite honest with you. And you know, right tackle, I think, has been an area that you don't feel great about with this Panthers team. And now, you know, you wonder, too, with the trickle-down effect of Greg Olsen, how is this going to affect the entire dynamic of the offense? But, you know, again, the hope is that it's just maybe just a Sean McDermott thing. Maybe this Buffalo Bills defense is going to be a really good unit, and they have some quality players. Their defense hasn't really been the problem in Buffalo the past couple of years. It's been more on the offensive side of the football. But, you know, but it was reason for concern because really this Panthers team got nothing done too well on the ground or in the air.
Yeah, and you know, Alex, I want to ask you a little bit about the whole Sean McDermott going up against the Panthers last week. And, of course, it was a huge storyline here. Everybody talking about what he knew and his familiarity with the group. And, you know, I think maybe for you just heard so much about, look, it's going to come down to execution. It's about what's going on between the lines. But after the game, everyone kind of made it seem like, yeah, I mean, he knew quite a bit about what he was going to see from the Panthers. And do you think that, you know, I know you mentioned it and alluded to it. Do you think that some of the Carolina's offense's ineffectiveness is due largely to what Sean knew and what he was able to kind of employ in his new Bills players against a Panthers team that he was very familiar with?
You know, and let's not forget, too, I mean, the Bills have quality players up
right.
front. I mean, this is a very good front seven that they're playing against. You know, Ryan Khalil. Right? I mean, he's
yep.
inactive for this game. So that's significant. You know, when you have Larson at center, that's something that's different. And, you know, but is it a reason for alarm? Sure, to some extent, but not every team can do what Buffalo does. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Not every team is going to have that quality of inside defensive tackles. Not every team is going to be able to get out on the edge with a Jerry Hughes, for example, or send a Lorenzo Alexander. So,
sure.
And, you know, listen, Shaq Lawson, one play when he hit Jonathan Stewart in the backfield at the goal line. Oh, my goodness. You know, I mean, I thought it just, boom, fired out of a cannon. But reason for long-term concern? Hey, I can understand why Panthers fans are feeling that way. Trust me, because it has been an issue for this team for a long period of time. And you just have to wonder, did they truly get it addressed? The good news is, though, you got a team that's really struggling on defense coming to Bank of America Stadium on Sunday in the New Orleans Saints, because they have not been able to muster any sort of quality pressure, and they're getting a very young secondary exposed in a big-time way.
Speaking of attacking a secondary, Alex, I think we managed to go 4 or 5 minutes without mentioning Cam Newton's name, which is pretty rare on the airwaves, I think. So I'll throw Cam out there and kind of ask for your assessment through 2 weeks of his return, so to speak.
Well, I think better in week two, and he's shaking off rust. Let's not forget, you know, Cam was, you know, didn't get the benefits of a preseason. And, you know, listen, we think he's Superman, right? You know, really, because he was so great in 2015, and it just seemed like, you know, this was like a Madden character come to life, the way that he played that year. Last year, and there's no question about it, he regressed. How much of that was a shoulder injury? How much of it was at the offensive line? How much of it was at his receiving targets? It's really probably a lot of blame to be spread around. But this, to me, was a very rusty Cam Newton entering the season. It showed against San Francisco early on. He started doing better in the second half. You know, one thing we're all going to keep our eyes on is his completion percentage, and you know, how well is he doing? He's 20 of 32 last week for 228. You know, not a dominant outing by any means, but a very nice ball distribution, getting the ball out to, I believe, 9 different targets during that game.
Yep.
That, there's something to be said about that. So, you know, I think we'll just see him grow. I think we'll get a little better assessment now. That, you know, against New Orleans, a team that he's familiar with, and if he doesn't put up big numbers against this defense, and it is a horrendous defense, as I say, then yeah, I think people are going to wonder, where is Cam Newton at exactly?
Well, you mentioned a horrendous defense for New Orleans right now, obviously ranked at the very bottom of the NFL. And off the top, you talked about Carolina's defense, right at the very top of the NFL right now in total defense. But, Alex, I will say that there are those out there who look at the opponents Carolina has played through 2 weeks and aren't sold necessarily yet that this defense is best in the NFL caliber just yet. Do you, though, look at what they've done these first 2 weeks, look at their personnel, and say, yeah, it may have been against the Bills, it may have been against the 49ers, but you feel like even against Breeze, Brady, and whoever else is coming on this schedule, this defense will play at that kind of high level?
Yeah, I believe that. Well, listen, we have a track record here, right, with Carolina. It's not like, oh, they had a good defense for 1 year and then they dipped back down, anything like that. No, defense is traditionally good year after year, so you have that to be based upon. I mean, I understand, you know, I don't know what more you could ask of this defense than what you got through the first 2 weeks. They absolutely demolished the 49ers offense. And listen, the 49ers hung tough against Seattle, and we talk about them and their defense. 49ers did better on the road in week two than they did in week one against Carolina.
Yeah.
And yes, new offense and guys can use it. But, and then last week, I mean, look, and I understand too, this is if Tyrod Taylor doesn't misfire to Zay Jones, and Zay would have had to have made an amazing catch. The ball was thrown slightly behind him. It just, you know, and then when that fourth down play, you know, failed, that's when the Panthers were able to run out the clock. But Thomas Davis still at the top of his game. He got two sacks last week from Julius Peppers. That's significant because he was so limited in the preseason. You just wonder, you know, hey, how much gas does he have left in the tank? He did just fine. Luke Kuechly, still Luke Kuechly. I mean, these guys are good, man. I mean, they're really good. And I just believe, listen, I know that Worley's going to continue to get picked upon because teams want to throw at James Bradbury, but I'm a big believer in Steve Wilks. I'm a big believer in Ron Rivera, and this will continue to be the strength of this team.
Alex, people would call this an ugly win, I think is what they would say. I hope Panther fans, you know, just appreciate how hard it is to win and don't necessarily
exactly
look at it that way. I mean, I'm curious for you, like, from a league perspective, there have been a few scores that look like 9-3, 13-9, that type of thing. You know, what do you kind of think about the quality of play through 2 weeks and the watchability of the league so far?
Listen, we're football fans, right? We're going to watch whatever. We may grumble about it, may not be all too happy, you know, may complain about Thursday night football, et cetera, but the reality is we're going to sit there and we're going to watch it because we love football and we hope that the play picks up. I think there's a couple things that are involved in this. I think that offensive line play around the league is just not what it once was. There's reasons for that. I think largely developing offensive linemen, and it just seems like it's hard enough to get five good ones on the field. Then if you're able to do that, if you have one injury sometimes, that unit can simply fall apart. I mean, you look at the Chicago Bears last week. I mean, they're switching Cody Whitehair. He played three different positions in that game. Started at center, went to left guard, then had to go to right guard because of injuries to the Bears up front. You know, so you look at that. I think you look at some quarterbacking situations around the NFL, just not enough good guys at this point. I think, you know, when you've got Josh McCown starting, when you have Mike Glennon starting, I mean, look at the bad teams. They have bad quarterbacks. Jacoby Brissett is starting 2 weeks after being acquired from the New England Patriots. What does that tell you about the quarterbacking state of things in Indianapolis? So I think that's it. But other than that, I think, too, sometimes with the scores, I don't think we've seen as many dynamic special teams plays that we have in the past also, which would raise the scores up as well. I think it's been a little bit slow on that end. But, you know, again, I think the NFL, they don't look at these things in a vacuum. Much like television ratings, they don't panic after the first week the numbers are down. They figure, hey, ratings are going to bounce back. Let's get a more accurate picture as the season goes on. And now we get to week three, week four, week five, and I think the good teams will continue to adjust and they'll begin to put up some more points. And, you know, hopefully, again, some of these players that are out right now are able to get back on the field sooner than later, some of the stars around the league.
Well, thanks for the time, Alex. Really appreciate you coming on. Guys, that's Alex Marvez of SiriusXM NFL, Sporting News NFL columnist.
Well, thank you so much,
guys. Awesome. Thanks, Alex.
Some interesting things he said there, Brian. I mean, what do you make of really, I guess, Alex's thoughts on, I guess let's start with the offense, because he had a lot to say kind of about this offensive line and some of the concerns the fans might have about that unit right now.
Yeah, he said things we have talked about, obviously, is a group that's still growing, especially when it comes to Matt Khalil specifically. Obviously, the other guys are mostly familiar with each other. I thought something to keep in mind is, too, it's all relative in this league. He talked about the, you know, lack of quality offensive lines out there. So not a good week for the Panthers offensive line, but not the only team having to deal with that. That's a reality around the league right now. So relatively speaking, you know, this is a group that you can win behind.
I think so. And, you know, I think he makes a good point just about the challenges that every team right now is having just fielding offensive lines and protecting their quarterbacks. This league, the defensive players playing those edge rush positions are getting so good, and they're so fast and so physical. And I mean, they're tough matchups, and especially with the way they rotate guys. Right. That's the thing. You know, I think people forget this sometimes. The offensive linemen out there, they don't come out and miss any snaps.
True.
I mean, they're in there 100% of the time. These other guys are rotating guys in, fresh bodies, and they're designed to come in there and rush the passer full force when these offensive linemen have been out there for however many plays. Yeah. So, look, bottom line, though, I mean, that's the way it is, and you got to figure out a way to protect your quarterback. That's going to be a huge point of emphasis for Carolina going forward. And let's talk a little bit more about that quarterback, though. Cam Newton, like Alex said, felt like took some steps forward here in his second game. But it was interesting hearing him talk about his performance afterwards and the frustration coming out. I mean, he was trying to check himself and keep it in because
right.
he knows he has to trust the process. But you can tell that he's a little frustrated right now by those missed opportunities that in week two nearly cost his team.
He is, and it's understandable. I mean, he expects as much as more of himself than anybody else does out there, and he knows that the plays were there to be made. That is, again, a silver lining that he doesn't want to talk about after the game, that there are the plays there to be made, that this offense is creating opportunities that can put points on the board. They've just got to execute. We heard it a million times leading up to the Bills game. It's going to be about execution. And no, the Panthers did not execute offensively like they hoped they would. They certainly did defensively, and it added up to the win. And, you know, as Alex talked about, he was very matter-of-fact about, hey, this team is 2-0, you know, that's a big deal in this league. You know, when you're as close to it as we are, Max, and the fans are, it's so easy sometimes and understandable to get kind of overwhelmed by the negatives you see even in a loss. But the team's 2-0.
Yeah, they are. They're 2-0 right now. That's where everybody kind of hoped they would be looking at the schedule. And now, look, as Alex said, New Orleans comes into town reeling on defense. But you know that they've always got an offense that's capable of winning them a game.
Yeah.
The week after, they go to face New England in New England. Everybody, when the schedule came out, looked at that and said, okay, that's going to be a real litmus test for this team. So we'll find out. And as we talked about, no Greg Olsen. That's a challenge. Protecting Cam is going to continue to be a point of emphasis and a challenge for this team. But defensively, as we've been saying it for the first 2 weeks, they're built to win. I mean, I think that defense is going to keep them in every game. We're going to find out, and maybe all of us will have something different to say about the defense after they go up against these two quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But my money right now is on this defense being good enough to keep them in every ball game.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think 2 weeks from now they'll still be only getting up 3 points per game on average. I'll go on that on limb. But I also don't think the offense will be just averaging 16 points a game. I think, you know, we were talking to Alex about these low-scoring games around the league. I don't think we're going to quite see the same final score the next 2 weeks from the Panthers. But again, if the Panthers have more points than the other team, we'll take it.
Yeah, and we'll see who steps up for this team. Without Olsen, opportunities for Funchess, guys like Curtis Samuel. I know the fans want to see Curtis Samuel more involved. Christian McCaffrey hasn't really been able to bust loose yet. I feel like that's coming pretty soon. Buffalo did a good job of bottling him up. But there's weapons on this offense, and I think they're going to find a way to – they have to. They have to find a way to make it work without Greg. And I think, look, when he comes back from injury, I don't know about what you think, Brian, but if and when he does come back, I think he's going to come back to a team that's in position to contend.
Yeah, it's exciting to, you know, to kind of think where could they be when he comes back, and how can he add to what we hope will be a good product, or how can he pick things up for a team that, you know, hits a mid-season slump.
Right.
You never know. There's so many unanswered questions out there. I mean, I remember 2 years ago, Charles Johnson coming back late in the season provided a boost off the IR in the 15-1 season. How much of a boost do we need that year, though?
Yeah, that's true. Well, hey, thanks for joining us this week, everybody. Before we go out, I do want to say, make sure you try that sriracha and peanut butter combo. They bring this whole thing full circle.
There you go.
Trust me, it's a Brian Strickland recommendation, and it won't steer you wrong.
Yeah, I'm ready for lunch, actually.
That's a good thought. Let's go get some lunch. Thanks, everybody.